Hi there, I'm Luba Dvorak, singer-songwriter here in Houston, Texas. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch. And that tells us that it is 6 p.m. Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston, or kpft.org HD1 on the internet, all the way to the space station. I'm Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on fascinating journeys before returning us safely to the present. Tonight, I want to introduce Joanne Pelletier to you. I met her through the personal narrative story group that holds 99-second Story Slam challenges. You can find them on Facebook. Joanne is from Montreal, and among many things that she does, she has some special stories for us about her life in the ring. And yes, by that I mean a boxing ring. And yes, I was blown away by that also. So I can't wait to hear her stories. Joanne, welcome to So What's Your Story on KPFT here in Houston, Texas.
Thank you so much, Mary. Thank you. And hello, What's Your Story audience.
So however did you find yourself in the role of a boxer?
So I am going to start tonight with what I call my superhero origin story in boxing. So it answers that very question, because it's certainly not the first time I've been asked. It's one of the first boxing stories I've told. Are we ready?
We are ready.
All right. So I'm in a boxing gym in Philadelphia, and the air is thick with sweat. And all around me, I just hear the sounds of gloves hitting the bag and the tap, tap, tap of skipping ropes around me hitting the floor. The gym's busy, but I'm in the ring alone and I'm shadow boxing. Now, this is what fighters do to warm up. You practice your punches and your footwork and your mental focus. Shadow boxing, it simulates a fight, but without a real opponent. It's just you and your imagination. You're meant to conjure up your opponent and practice all your best moves. Now the bell rings. It's the end of the round. And in the corner of my eye, I see a kid just outside the ring. He comes closer. He tucks his head in between the ropes. Our eyes meet. He says, "Excuse me, ma'am." He says, "My coach says I can learn a lot from you. It's the way you shadow box. He says you're real good and that you must have been a big lady boxer back in the day. I've been watching you. Coach told me to come over." So I'm from Canada. I don't get called ma'am a whole lot. I know this is polite. But more importantly, he called me big lady boxer back in the day, as in, am I famous for having been a boxer in my prime just from watching me shadow box in the ring? Big lady boxer? No way. I don't tell him I started late in life, in my 40s. It started with being stuck in traffic on my way to work every day, stuck on the same narrow street long enough to be distracted by a boxing gym on the corner. It was so close, I could see inside. I could have found another route, sure, but I don't know, the movements of those boxers, the way they look so focused on their imaginary opponents, the sounds of them hitting the bag, hitting each other, it drew me in. I remembered watching boxing as a kid on television, you know, back when boxing was big. Ellie, Frasier, the greats from way back. I started to look forward to getting stuck in traffic in that very spot every day. Like, I worked it out so I could get stuck. But the truth is, I not just stuck in traffic, I was stuck in my own life then, looking for inspiration. I was thinking about changing jobs. I was overwhelmed with being a caregiver to my parents, navigating a lot about life on my own. And one day, while stopped on that same street, I pull over and I go in. I had a bag of gym clothes in the car and I signed up for a class. At the time, there were no women's classes, so it's just me and the guys. And the training is grueling, like beyond anything I'd done before. Even though I've been athletic all my life, it was lots of running and skipping rope and learning to hit a bag and punch sequences and really just holding up my arms in a boxing stance was tough enough at first. A few weeks in, I noticed that at this boxing gym, everyone seems to have a nickname. It's like Cheers, the bar. Somebody walks in and everyone shouts their name. Now, I don't have a nickname yet because I just started, but I know I need boxing gloves. So I ask the owner if he has gloves. And before he can answer, I say, hey, do you have anything in pink? And I keep talking nervously at him, like, wait, I don't know why I just asked you that, because I don't even own anything pink. And I keep going on nervously over explaining myself, like, I wonder, I guess, if I thought it could make boxing more feminine if the gloves are pink. Like, is this me in an old reflex, some gendered well-worn instinct, like a way of managing expectations of the world around me? Am I trying to make it more girly? The owner stares back at me blankly. It's a long, awkward pause. He says, you need to pick another color. And he hands me new white boxing gloves, my first pair. The first of many over the years. I've owned white and black, blue, gold, silver, red. I've never had anything pink. But the memory of that over-explaining ask sticks like a solid jab, because in this gym, nobody remembers my name, my real name, because from that exchange and from this day on, I have a nickname. In boxing, I'm only known as Pink. My first workout wear was much as always, usually black jogging pants and a t-shirt. Now, I noticed lots of fighters, particularly the guys, wear Lycra tights under their shorts, so I start to do this too. And as my shoulders grow and my arms get more defined, I cut the sleeves off all my t-shirts. Thing is, nobody cares what I wear here. Everything is worn and eventually soaked through with the effort of the workout. But the thing is, I care. It's my way of being all in. I want to eat, train, and sleep boxing. And I stick with it. I take more classes several times a week, thousands of hours of drills, doing the same thing over and over again. And at first, the thrill is just to do it, to survive it. But then I get faster, better, more coordinated. And a year in, my boxing is exercise thing. It's love, kismet, an attachment to the sport. Me and boxing get serious and I start to get unstuck and I get good. Not just good for my age back then in my 40s or my weight. Yes, a heavyweight always, but I get legit good, as in good enough to spar with others. The kind of good that gets you talking and thinking about a fight, even accepted by the gym guys good. And now I want more, a total immersion in the sport. So I think I'm going to start traveling to other cities, iconic historic places that have trained the greats in Brooklyn, Chicago, Vegas, Philly. I want to train where the greats have been. And for these trips, I pack all my boxing gear and a whole bunch of explanations. See, the guys at my home gym, they know me and accept me. But now I'm going on the road to train and I figure I need a story, like why me at my age and boxing, just in case. I think as a middle-aged woman then, now, I'm sometimes used to over-explaining myself, working hard to be seen and understood. And I was ready to tell my story, the real story about the traffic thing, if I had to. But in all of those cities, there was never one single question, not one doubtful look. Nobody needed any explanation. My story, my justification. More than that, in each place, I was embraced like a regular. Like that sweltering day in Las Vegas, I'm training at Johnny Tacos on Charleston Boulevard, one of the oldest boxing gyms in the U.S., a place that still trains the greats. And the trainer says he notices that I'm on my own and invites me to hit the bags with the Swedish boxing team because they're visiting just like I am and doing a training camp just like me. Of course, I say yes. In Chicago, at Sam Colonna Boxing, the manager takes me aside, tells me I'm dropping my left hand way too much. He's been watching me out of the corner of his eye. If I want to come back tomorrow, when he has more time, we'll work on it, he says. I extend my stay. I go back the next day. And in Brooklyn, at the legendary Gleason's Gym, the owner, Bruce, introduces me to the women's heavyweight champion who offers to help me find a sparring partner, someone who's at my level, a beginner. And I spend the afternoon talking boxing with her and the other fighters. No need to over-explain, to campaign, to rationalize this middle-aged love of boxing. I never get to share my stuck in traffic story, not once, because I just have a sense of belonging here. And now here I am in Philly, still trying to train like a champ, chasing the inspiration of being in places where all that matters is you love the sport. And there's that kid, excuse me, ma'am, and me, big lady boxer back in the day. So I do what I know, what I learned from boxing, this community. I turn to him, I nod, I lift the ropes and invite him into the ring with me. He steps in and the bell sounds. It's the start of another round, and me and this kid, we shadow box together, each with our own imaginary opponents. As I'm shadow boxing, I watch him in the corner of my eye. He's young and he's fast and precise and he's so very good. After a few rounds, we sit ringside and we talk boxing about training and what it means to be all in, whatever your age, whatever in my case hurts that day. He asks me what he can work on and I give him my short list of things I've seen in him. I give him what others have done for me. He thanks me and says, yeah, you see, my coach said you would probably do this. This is what makes you a real boxer. I say, thanks. I watch him get back in the ring. He's working on his shadow boxing, on his moves. And I'm not sure what a real boxer is, but I know I am still all in. Mostly unstuck, and I belong here.
Beautiful. Oh, beautiful. And I love the journey you took us on, starting with him in Philadelphia and then going back through the traffic story and all the visits to all the other gyms and the experiences. So I guess in another life, you probably were a big lady boxer in the day.
Maybe I was, though I can't imagine, in my 20s, this kind of world would not have been accessible to me, whereas women now can certainly advance in the sport at a much, if they start young. Maybe I was in a previous life a fighter. I'm not sure.
So that's interesting. So 20 years ago, there were more barriers to women boxing?
There would not have been a lot of gyms in North America. I can't speak for the rest of the world, but even in New York, the thriving boxing scene, there would have been reticence about having women training in boxing gyms. Indeed, Gleason's Gym in Brooklyn was one of the first to be really embracing and encouraging of women in the gym. And now boxing gyms throughout North America are full of women. Boxing is very popular. There are women's classes, there are mixed classes, there are lots of competitions, there's lots of room. Even I suppose if I wanted to go back to fighting, I could maybe come up with an opponent my age and my weight class for an exhibition fight, but I don't wish to do that. But there certainly are many, many more women in boxing now than there would have been even 10 or 20 years ago.
Did you ever fight in exhibition?
I fought two exhibitions.
That's very impressive.
One I lost, one I won.
Oh, congratulations. So let me just ask you, was the second one the one that you won and after that you quit?
I'm not sure. That's right. The second one I won, not by very much in terms of points, but I don't think I ever quit. I think I got very rational about the risks in even exhibition fights, which can be more relaxed. That is, your intent is not to really to hurt one another, but it is an extension almost of sparring or practice fighting. And there just are not, at least in Montreal, and even if I were to go to Brooklyn, not a lot of women in their 50s. And, you know, now that I've turned 60, my age, who are willing to get in the ring. So, and I'm careful too about the risks are just too great.
Okay. Because I did wonder about in traumatic brain injury, and I was a big Muhammad Ali fan, and it was so sad to watch him go through the changes that he went through because of the TBI, the traumatic brain injury. So I was going to ask you how you faced that.
I did have a concussion, but actually not from boxing, from another sport. I've seen the risks live as a boxing judge. So I have seen people knocked out in amateur fights who live with the implications long after. So it's ironic that, you know, this is called a sport, but nobody plays at boxing in quite the way one plays tennis or football. Well, football's another one that where concussions are rampant, but every sport has its risks. But this is a very tough space. There is no question.
I guess, though, as a shadow boxer, then you're, like you say, you're playing against your imaginary opponent, so you don't get hit.
You don't. And you can, many even amateur athletes, as I did, can spar in gyms. So that's practice fighting, where the sparring can be heavily controlled and you can agree with your opponent that you're not going to hit in the head, for instance, no head hits, body only, which would be a way of testing your reflexes and still, you know, engaging your footwork and using all of the technique that you've learned. And you would wear headgear, of course, and a mouthpiece. And you could even ask your opponent to just go easy. My practice with sparring was really only to spar with people that I had a deep trust in. Another woman who was close to my age, close enough to my age, which is rare enough, and my weight class, and that someone who I know is not going to use it as an opportunity to express, you know, extreme anger or be unable to control their emotions. I mean, there's a lot of emotion in the ring, right? If you're faced with a punch, it's likely you're going to want to punch back.
Wow, that's fascinating.
So yeah, there are controls, right? You can take and apply if you really want to go there. And I think if I were to ever spar again, which, you know, some weeks my body, I think, can handle it, and I think I'd like to do it, it would only be with a person that I have this deep trust with.
Okay, that's actually a very important lesson for me, because I think of boxing as the sport where I saw Muhammad Ali compete and then suffer. And so to see this whole other world of shadow boxing and sparring and but being able to, how did he put it, dance like a butterfly, sting like a bee, and actually go through that, who knows? I'm 68. Maybe I'll take it up.
Well, I'll be able to tell you in one of the last stories how far some folks are taking it quite well into their 80s, actually. So that might inspire you.
All right. All right. Speaking of other stories, I mentioned when I introduced you that you're a member of the Personal Narrative Story Group that holds a 99-second Story Slam Challenge, or holds several challenges. Mm-hmm. So can you demonstrate a 99-second story about boxing?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I am a Grand Slam winner of the 99-second story competition from a couple of years ago. And the story that I'm going to do is won another competition in Canada, the Quebec Writers Federation competition last year. So this is, I'm hoping I can still get it in 99 seconds. Here goes. This is not my first time in a boxing ring, but here in Brooklyn, the stakes are high because my opponent is the champ, the women's heavyweight champion. Now, this is just sparring, like a friendly practice fight, but still people in the gym gather around the ring because, like, she's the draw, not me. I started boxing late in my 40s. I love the strategy of boxing, but I'm never going to be a champ. But I want to practice like I'm going to be one. I get a couple of lucky punches in early, and I hear the crowd cheer, but it's temporary because the champ, when she hits me back, I feel her power and I back off. After a while, she pushes her weight into me. She pins me against the ropes, and I feel her breath in my ear. She says, "You keep dropping your left hand. I'm going to hit you even harder. Focus. You know better." She's teaching me. I survived 3 rounds. I have a nosebleed and for sure a black eye on the way. I did okay. She didn't even break a sweat. I sit ringside to watch the next fight. I love being right here. The champ brings me an ice pack. She says, "Take this. That's going to swell. You keep dropping your left. You need to practice. Same time tomorrow, right?" "Yeah, right. See you tomorrow."
Beautiful. It's amazing how much you can pack into 99 seconds.
Indeed. That's the magic of the 99. A lot of compressed detail.
Yes, because I felt all that. I mean, I felt you getting hit, having a black eye, getting somebody whisper in your ear and all these things. And I was thinking, surely this has been a couple of minutes by now. I didn't time you. We're going to stop for station identification.
We are a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio, and anywhere on the internet as kpft.org HD1. Our show, So What's Your Story, is broadcast every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central Time. But as you will hear, you can listen to the show after it has been aired. Yes. Just visit our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at HoustonStorytellers.org, where you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. Want to become a storyteller? Join the Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab at HoustonStorytellers.org and grab the Zoom info for the next virtual swap. The next one will actually be on February 27th at 7 p.m. Central Time. Go to their events tab and get the Zoom invite. There is a lot to look forward to in 2024 with the March Texas Storytelling Festival in Denton and the June Texas Storytelling Association Conference in Houston. Our friends at The Moth are back at Warehouse Live in person. The Story Slam is held on the second Tuesday of the month, and the next one up is February 13th at 7 p.m. Central Time at their new location, 2600 Travis Street, also now known as Warehouse Live Midtown. The theme is Love Hurts. Yeah, tell me about it. Check out themoth.org live storytelling and their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, for updates on their event and to buy tickets.
Well, now let's get back to boxing and life as a lady boxer. Joanne, maybe you can tell us about one of your most surprising moments in the ring.
I think I've had a lot of surprises in the ring, as in I think the first time I felt a punch, for instance, I still remember it vividly. I think I probably wanted to cry the first time. It was a practiced fight. I don't think my reaction was quite the same after. But one of the most surprising moments was actually not in the ring, but ringside. And that's the next story I'd like to tell you. And it's about becoming a boxing judge.
Please.
Yeah. So that's a blood stain on the canvas. I see it from here. And that's the sign of a well-used boxing ring. This is my first night as an amateur boxing judge. I've been training as an apprentice judge, but tonight my decisions, my scores are going to count for real. I've just met all the fighters and the coaches at the weigh-in. And now I'm all set up on a table right next to the ring. I've got the best seat in the house. I've got my rule book, my water bottle, my scorecard. I'm ready. I know all the rules. I know the ropes. I know boxing. I adjust my bow tie. I'm wearing a judge's uniform. It's a perfect night. Tonight, the head judge is a woman. There's only a few of us in the sport at this level. And she approaches, leans over to me and says, "Hey, listen, remember, eyes forward on the ring. Never engage with the crowd. You need to look disinterested in everyone and everything but the fight and your scorecard." She looks so serious, and I'm a little nervous, and I misjudge this moment as the right time for a joke. And I smile broadly and say to her, "Oh, you mean I should have like resting judge face, right?" And she doesn't think this is funny at all. And she looks harshly at me and says, "Remember, don't smile, don't flinch. Even if the fighters come so close, you can smell them. Eyes focused forward." I get it. I go back to being serious. I mean, boxing's all about the rules, and I appreciate her advice. One more thing she says, "Watch for the crowd in the corners." And then she just steps into the ring because she's the referee tonight. And I'm like, wait a minute, what about the crowd in the corners? What does that mean? She means the corners of the ring where the fighters and the coaches are. The red corner is to my right, just a few feet away. The blue is on the other side of the ring. The crowd, a couple of hundred people, are right behind me. In all my time in boxing, I never heard this phrase, the crowd in the corners. And I know boxing, me and boxing, a kismet sparked years ago, and I still train as a fighter, but becoming a boxing official, a judge, and a referee was the next logical step in my immersion in the sport. Come on, like, this is my first official night. I don't have time for wordplay. What is the crowd in the corners? And I don't have time to ask now because the lights are going down and the music stops and the fights are about to start. The arena here, it smells like a rank gym bag. And that's just the crowd because they're rowdy and loud and they've been drinking since the doors opened. There are lots of distractions in a fight night. There's loud music between the rounds. There's the crowd and the coaches, the shouting everywhere. Some fight nights can feel like a rave or a party that's just interrupted by highly organized fighting. Tonight, this is important because my judging scores need to be the same as the other judges. I need a unanimous decision. To pass this final test, I need to see the fight exactly the same way the other judges do, beyond any distraction. So I take the ref's advice, resting judge face, locked in. I lean forward. I sharpen my gaze on the fighters. When I'm judging a fight, I don't remember the names of the fighters, even though it's on the scorecard. I just know them as red or blue, the color of their gloves and their outfits. So eyes forward, the fight starts. And this is not really a challenging fight to judge. The details of the rounds are not even story worthy. The red fighter's losing. The blue is controlling the fight. This is called ring generalship. Better punching, effective aggression, strategy, power, better all around. Red's face, it's his own scorecard. Bloody nose, red marks that are going to be black and blue tomorrow. But there is something. Like, I'm not distracted by it, but it gets my attention. It's not what I see, it's what I hear. from the red corner, just to my right. Every time the red fighter is hit, his coach cheers, shouts, "Fantastic! Yes, well done!" The red coach is cheering like his fighter is winning, and that's not the case. Every time the red coach shouts, the crowd follows, jumping, shouting, surging behind me, "Go, go, red!" It's not like they're fans of red. It's like they're seeing a completely different fight where red is winning and he's not. It's obvious. The ref, that woman, she stares at me when this happens and looks away. I get it now. The crowd in the corners. I remember that red coach, he met me at the weigh-in. He knows I'm new, that I'm being tested tonight. He said to me, "Oh, a new judge, eh? Congratulations, so delighted to meet you," sarcastically. I didn't think for a second he was delighted to meet me. It's not watch for the crowd in the corners. It's listen, but don't listen to the crowd in the corners. I was being played. I was tipped off by the ref, yes, but this, I've heard of this. It's a judge's baptism, an off-the-book strategy by the coaches in the corners. It's often whether with a new judge or where they just don't know you yet. You cheer for the fighter, even when your fighter is being pummeled and failing. It keeps the fighter pumped up and encouraged, and hey, that's good. But the real purpose is to get the crowd going, to make them influencers, like fake news, fake cheering. To an unknowing crowd, you shout loud enough and people are going to follow, and you might distract and confuse the judge, have me question what I see. That's what they were trying to do. To persuade, distract, confuse me. I know what I saw. Blue won the fight, and I judge it correctly, and I get a unanimous decision. I pass the test. That woman ref, she comes over to me and says, "Hey, sorry, but you caught it, right? You were okay. We know you'd be fine. We knew you'd be fine. They won't try you again." I was never really sure who was testing me that night, or what I was being tested on. But I'm ready for the next fight. I adjust my bow tie. I have my rule book, water bottle, scorecard, eyes forward. It's a perfect night.
What a metaphor for all the distractions, the information. Like you said, it's like a disinformation campaign.
Yeah. And it's very common. And I did hear about it. And in fact, I've probably witnessed it. Anyone who's watched a sporting event has probably seen coaches overact and overperform at some level to serve as a distraction. But a boxing ring is a very condensed frame, right, with all the lights on us. And so as much as a judge can, And the job is really to block out all of the noise, to try to stay away from the influence of the crowd. It can be difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's such a perfect metaphor for all the noise.
For social media. Yeah.
You know, from social media, from everything, all the inputs constantly. I mean, talking about all the inputs is, I tell people, listen, don't leave voice on my voicemail. I've got a personal email. I've got a work email. I text. There's only so much I can keep up with. If you leave a voice on my voicemail, I may find it 3 or 4 months later. If you text me, I look at that because I have kids. And I know that I might be getting one of these texts like I got today. Did you find my letter from such and such a credit card company? Did you find my credit? You know, and it's like, please. I'm semi-retired from parenthood. You're an adult, right? but there's this constant influx of information, and I love that as a metaphor. In fact, I teach residents pathology, and I think I'm going to make them listen to that story so they know that when they're getting all this input, it's this diagnosis, it's that diagnosis, it's this, blah, 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 blah. Just like, and in your job, you're getting all this, just like, slow down.
Yeah. And all of us have to, you know, we're all faced with a lot of distractions. I'm reminded of, it's very acute, I suppose, around a boxing ring where my focus has to be in a certain direction all the time. And you have to resist also the tendency even to look around the ring, because people will exchange looks. So, and if you're careful enough, you can actually read the perception of another judge, which you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to be communicating at all, right? It is this kind of cone of silence. It's a very interesting practice, and I would hope people are somewhat more sympathetic to boxing judges, because it isn't, first, it's a subjective task, albeit based on a lot of experience, but it's a tough thing to do.
Yes. So I'm actually a big baseball fan. So I'm all the more encouraged to look at what the umpires are saying and what their point of view is, instead of saying, that was a wrong call, my team made it.
Yeah.
That's
it's a tough slog to be a sports official, I suspect. Yeah. Rarely is anyone very happy with anything we do, I would say.
That's true. The old saying, you can make some of the people happy some of the time, but you can't make everybody happy all of the time. Mm-hmm.
There's an expression in boxing that I really like, that the only thing square about boxing is the ring.
Okay. I think I have to modify that for pathology. the only thing round in your microscope is your eyepiece.
There you go.
Outside of that baptism by fire, did anybody actually ever, challenge you as a judge, as a woman, as a lady boxer? Did anybody ever disrespect you, so to speak?
Not in judging. I found and limited time in refereeing recently, the context is very, I would say, very, very rule bound, protocol based. There are coaches and athletes that contest decisions, and there's a process for that. I'm quite accustomed to it. It's rare to expect someone who is lost isn't, unfortunately, magnanimous enough to realize in the moment why they lost, right? They're still filled with all of the emotion of the moment. When I've stopped fights, athletes can be very angry, but I've stopped them for their own safety.
Oh, interesting. So as a judge, you can actually go in and say,
no, as a referee, I've stopped fights. And in though, we're careful about whether it's appropriate to do this, but in between the rounds, if I feel that one fighter is struggling much more and not showing me enough, that is, he or she is unable to defend themselves, I will go to the corner and say, unless you show me something, the next time you're hit, I'm going to stop the fight. So it gives the corner an opportunity to think about whether it's time for them to cede if it's really imbalanced. The role of the referee is to protect the athletes, right? And the role of the judges is to protect the reputation of the fighters. So appropriate judging will do that. And certainly the ref should be able to see where things are going south in such a way that one party is going to be more compromised than another. Now, in a professional context, there's more leeway given, and there's much talked about in terms of whether that's appropriate or not. There have been tragic cases, right, of deaths in the ring where fights have not been stopped in time, but there are relatively fewer of those in boxing. So,
yes, and I'm learning so much more about the field just through your stories. So is there just a common code of respect in the boxing gyms?
I think there is respect, and there's this curious, at least I've experienced this, what I consider a democratized quality, that I wonder, for example, if I wanted to be a tennis player and I started ringing up tennis centers and asking whether I could hire a very highly ranked pro to work with me, the chances are I would be summarily dismissed off to some tennis course somewhere, as I probably should. But in boxing, I think the sport is not on a healthy scale the way tennis is, but you can have access to pros or near pros, even where you're a rank amateur or just like a casual fighter in the case of me, so a recreational boxer. So I was surprised at first that I wasn't questioned more. And it wasn't just because I was paying for the service. I think I was genuinely treated in, and still am, like I truly belong.
Oh, that's nice. Do you have a story about that?
I have another 99 that I did just recently for a Story Slam. Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, one word painted on a wall at the boxing gym. And look, I feel it here. I feel respected. Nobody ever asks me why me, the middle-aged lady, is into boxing. It doesn't matter that I'm one of the few women in the classes. All that matters, I work hard, I commit. And the owner, he's super supportive of me. I mean, I swear he sees and hears everything. He can be on the other side of the gym, and if I stop hitting the bags early, or worse yet, I sit down before the end of the round, I'll hear my name called, Pink, what are you doing? Across the gym, he calls me out. He says, who told you to stop? Keep going to the end of the round. Then you rest. So I know better. I just always do something. I just keep going. But one night in class, I noticed these two new guys. They end up next to me during the boxing class, and we're doing some drills, you know, to warm up, like jumping jacks and burpees and push-ups. And my shoulders are sore from working out yesterday. So I don't do the push-ups. I just drop to the floor and I do leg lifts. And these two guys are staring at me laughing. And they say, look, it's damn Jane Fonda. The owner blows a whistle. He shouts to everyone in the room, everybody down on the floor, 50 leg lifts each side. And he winks at me and I keep going. And yeah, we never saw those guys again.
That's good. That's good. I wish I could say that happened every day in the science world for women.
Well, I think the story that I'm not telling today is the my progression in judging and refereeing has not been so storied. I would say though I have not come upon blocks in my journey, despite my age or my experience, it certainly is the case in judging, where women judges, I think, at least in this part of Canada, are not as welcome. So a great example is I've judged over 500 fights, but my access to being a ref in the ring is quite limited. But men who are older than me, less fit, don't train as boxers, but by chance have been, I don't know, ex-prison guards or have been in the military, are welcomed in and advanced right through. So that part is it's less a happy story.
I refer to that sometimes as female subtraction vision.
And yeah.
I've had, men that I've worked for that when they just look out and say, hey, I need somebody for this. And I'll take you, Mike. I'll take you, Mark. I'll take you, Tim. And I'm like, female subtraction vision. You just don't even see me while you're doing that. But it's good to know that there is a strong community and that you do have a lot of support. Like the woman referee who told you about the corners.
Yeah, I think no story is, I guess no fairy tale even is without its low points. I think overall it's been tremendously positive and I stay with it. I'm still committed to the sport very much. But indeed, I'm aware that there may be only so far. If I lived in the U.S., it might be different, I think. But at least in this jurisdiction, the perspective on judging is different.
Are you still boxing?
I'm certainly not fighting, but I'm still training, but having really over exercised probably for many parts of times in my life, whole decades, I'm dealing with injuries. So I'm also doing a lot of hot yoga to try to repair the damage I've done over the years. But yes, I try to still do rounds of shadow boxing, hitting the bags and working in the ring twice a week.
What have you done to modify your boxing as you have?
As I've aged. So boxing and aging. So, you know, aging and athleticism interest me a lot. And so this is a story that I performed a couple of times last year. And it really takes on the question of a perspective on our bodies and aging. And here we go. I'm on a mission. I want to train at a famous boxing gym, Gleason's in Brooklyn, New York. Oldest boxing gym in the Northeast. Now, I'm not new to boxing. I've been training for a couple of years, but I want to go to the source, the place where the champions are trained. I want to go to Brooklyn. So I call and I want to book a private session. We talk on the phone and the trainer says, okay, you're 45. You just started boxing. I say, yeah. And I get into this over-explaining thing I do. I started late, but I'm really fit. And he says, look, I'm not worried about that. He said, I just want you to warm up before you meet me. Go run the Brooklyn Bridge. It's right around the corner. Okay, I'm going to do that. Sure. And I get to the gym and I run straight up the three flights of stairs to the boxing gym. I drop my bag. I pay my fee. Oh my God, I see it. Muhammad Ali's signature is on the wall. He trained here. I run all the way back down the stairs. I run up the ramp to the bridge and I run straight across to Manhattan and all the way back. It's a sweltering summer day, 7 a.m. Nobody's on the bridge, just me and a few runners. And I'm not really a runner. Like, I'm not built to run. In boxing terms, I'm a heavyweight. I'm muscular and big, but I can run if I have to. And as I'm running, I catch glimpses of the skyline and I think, oh, maybe I should stop and take a selfie because this is like so cool to be here. But no, I'm on this mission. I got to go meet the trainer. So back on the Brooklyn side, no stopping, back up those stairs, grab the bag, the gear. I'm breathing hard. I'm a little damp and sweaty. I get my gloves, my wraps, my mouth guard, my headgear. I put on my boxing shoes. I can wait for the trainer, but I don't want to cool down. So I get started with shadow boxing in front of the mirror. I start working my moves, my slips, my punches, my footwork. But I'm quickly distracted. I see them now. Young ones behind me, men and women in their 20s. They're training just like me. I can't take my eyes off them. They're so young, so liquid, fast, and smooth. I'm on a mission here at 45. I want to be the best I can be. But all I can do now is watch them, all that excitement and focus on the bridge. Not so much now. I just stop in front of the mirror. My eyes are fixed on them. They're sweating just like me because it's 100 degrees in here, but they're not breathing hard like I am. I started all this way too late. In my 40s, I'm never going to be that fast, that smooth. And they're in my head and I'm in my head now. I just stand there looking in the mirror and I don't see a muscular heavyweight athlete. I see my round, wide hips and a very middle-aged body in the mirror. I keep comparing myself to those younger ones. They're everything I'm never going to be, so young, thin, fast. And then I hear him. Hey, the trainer. It's his trademark. You hear him before you see him. He comes over. He grabs me, slaps me on the back, shakes my hand, and pulls me close to him. You came here to work, right? Not to watch? What are you watching everyone else? Stop comparing yourself. Trust yourself. Show me what you got. So we start training. I hit the bags. We both get in the ring with headgear and mouthpieces and we spar. I hit him. He hits me. We hit each other. An hour passes. And now my clothes are soaked through. Everything is sticking to me. My face is red. When I do cardio, I get beet red. But I'm okay. My heart's pumping. My lungs are full and I feel really good and I'm just distracted. I keep watching those young ones. I think the more I watch them, I think it's going to rub off on me. A little bit of youth. I keep watching them and the trainer catches me. And when he sees me do this, he swats me hard on my side. He says, focus. When we stop for a break, one of the gym staff walks through the gym with a big Febreze bottle pointed straight up in the air. The heat and the smell of boxing is a lethal combination. When this happens, everybody, even the kids, they stop and laugh. I think I'll just want to stop and have a break. And when we stop, now I see another group. I didn't see them at first. The old ones, fighters in their 60s and 70s, trainer says one of them is 82. Wow. Like they're doing exactly what I'm doing, what the young ones are doing, only they're moving slower and they're careful, they're tentative, but they're confident and smooth. And to my eyes, they're fierce and wise because they don't seem distracted at all. They're not looking everywhere around like I am. I say to my trainer, hey, you think I should go train with them, the old ones? He says, no, they're seniors. You're too young. I mean, you're old, but you're too fast for them. You're not there yet. You got to trust yourself more. Can't you just be where you are? Get back to work. 2 hours pass. And I feel those 2 hours in every part of my body, my shoulders, my knees, my hips. Everything starts to creak and crackle at hour two. My clothes are soaked through. Even when I walk, I leave prints on the floor like my shoes are sweating. The trainer says, okay, that's it for today. It's a good start. You got skills. You can call me when you want to come back. Call me when you're ready to stop staring at everyone else. Call me when you're ready to be where you are. Thing is, see, back in the day, back then when I was 45, just starting in boxing, I was my own kind of liquid, fast and smooth. I just didn't see it. And now I'm 59. I don't run across the bridge anymore. I can still run, but I want to keep my knees and joints as long as I can. So now I just walk across the bridge, granted a brisk walk, all the way to Manhattan and all the way back. And on another sweltering day in July, I get to the gym. Now it's moved to a ground floor. I don't miss those three flights of stairs, having to go up and down all the time. And when I see the trainer from across the gym, we just both shout, hey, and we wave. I don't see him as much anymore. I mean, it's been over 10 years, lots of training here, other places. I have a routine that's mine. I just train for an hour, no more epic 2 hour workouts. I take breaks more often. Sometimes I just sit ringside and gossip with the regulars because I don't live in Brooklyn. I don't get here often enough. The woman with the Febreze bottle, she's still here. And when she passes by, it's a reminder to us that the open windows in this place are never going to keep up with the stink on a hot day. That part hasn't changed. The younger fighters are here and they look younger every day. And the seniors are here too. Now, sometimes they let me join them, but they always remind me I'm still too young. Most often I think, maybe I'm less distracted, still working on trusting I'm exactly where I need to be. I started this thing I love so late. I'm too old to be fast like the young ones, too young and distracted to be fierce and wise like the old ones. But I'm still on a mission. Now I just want to keep going as long as I can, trust myself enough to be right here where I am every step of the way. Maybe a little fierce, smooth and wise. Maybe those best days are still to come.
So nice. I have to say, I had lunch with a good friend of mine, and we both were talking about, as we're nearing the waning years of our careers, how we've been able to settle back and accept who we are, what battles you want to fight, and which you have no interest in, and how to go on doing the parts of your job that you love. I think your story embodies that. It's like how to stop being, have I done enough? Am I not doing enough? Have I done enough? Should I let go? Or can I just like move into a phase of, you know what, I'm happy with me.
Yeah, and just be where you are. Those older fighters, athletes of all ages are testament to that, right? People who work.
Yeah.
Long into their lives. I mean, there's no reason we should all just stop if we don't want to. So.
Right. Before we end the show, I'd like to ask, do you have any advice for women thinking of trying boxing?
I sure do. I think there most cities in North America have either a boxing gym that's devoted to boxing, and it's most likely these are places that have a beginner's boxing class. And these are not places where someone is going to hit you. You won't be hitting anyone else. It is a long time before anybody gets into the ring. It's not just anyone who's welcomed to even to something like sparring. You have to be invited to do that when the gym assesses that your skills are where they are. So boxing can be something that's exercise and need not be a combat sport. And there are boxing gyms that offer it. And there are also lots and lots of places now, certainly throughout the U.S., where they just have a room full of bags and you get practice at hitting the bags, but you're certainly not hitting another human. And these are great for upper body strength, which women can often lack. And so I would recommend at least trying that. There's something... I wanted to add that sometimes people will say, gee, you don't seem like a boxer because you're so peaceable. You don't seem angry. And boxing is not at all an angry sport. The most ineffective boxers are angry boxers. It's a sport about control and self-control and a pretty deep mindfulness, as is the case with a lot of even martial arts. And so having said that, many people find it cathartic to hit something. Mm-hmm. So there is that benefit. If you just need to hit something, hitting a bag is a great idea.
I know. I was, before the pandemic, I was working out at the gym, and I came in one day and I could hardly do anything because I was so frustrated with something that happened at work. And finally my trainer said, how about we go over to the punching bag?
Fantastic.
And that's what we did. Well, a big thank you to you, Joanne, for your stories about your journey as a boxer. It was absolutely fascinating.
Thank you. It was super fun. Thank you for the questions and the opportunity. Thank you, audience, for giving it a listen and thinking about boxing. Lovely.
Yes. And audience, don't leave. Stay tuned into KPFT because next up is Living Art with Michael Woodson and Michael Carson, a community art program that hosts artists from around Houston, including poets, writers, performance artists, visual artists, car artists, and others engaging in educating, promoting, and advancing art and artists in our Gulf Coast region. And just chill. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just hanging, join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It's a great way to make a life go by. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you want, remember, it's the journey and not the destination. And now, Joanne, I want to ask you, you've just told us about your journey in boxing. Do you want to choose a special piece of music to end the show?
I would love to. So there are so many very aggressive, loud songs associated with boxing, but the one that calls to me about my boxing experience is One Love by Bob Marley and the Wailers, because it is a song that is often played in my home boxing gym, Hard Knocks in Montreal, owned by a guy from Jamaica. But it also reflects my experience of boxing, of a community of caring and generosity and enlivened spirit. One Love.